PDM Purple Disco Machine, Benjamin Ingrosso, right here on Radio 3. There's a bit of Nile Rodgers too. That is called Honey Boy Tuesday, Arvo, it is. And at this time, we say hi to Morris Misolowski, business futurist. How are you?
Yeah, good. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Good to be back with you, Morris. Hope you've missed me, or not missed me.
I did. Of course I did. I was counting the days.
I'm sure you weren't. Anyway, lovely stuff. I like, whenever possible, to refer to Morris's own writing. It's only fair, really, and it's interesting. So, morrisfuturist.com blog, it says, when will the world peak? The population shifts reshaping our future. And me just reading it and not taking it, I'm like, will the world be full? Tell us more.
Well, it's actually a good question. When will the world be full? I mean, this peak population question is one that as humans we've talked about forever. When is too many people on the planet? And when will we have all the people we're ever possibly going to have and then start to reverse back?
Would that be possible if you think about it?
Yeah, it is. And it's for the first time ever, not only possible, but absolutely imminent. What we believe, again, statistics and damn lies, it doesn't really matter the day or the date, but statistics and damn lies, is that around the year 2084, so really just a dawdle away, we will have reached world population of around 10.4 billion people. And that will be it. At the moment, we're sitting around the eights, so we're around the 8.4. So we're waiting on about 2 billion people to join us over the next, 60 years-ish. What that means is that, and something we've never had to think about as humans, because for all sorts of reasons, and basic ones too, like contraception, having to have a whole lot of kids so that enough survive, people helping to work, all those kinds of issues and human things that we had around us, human stuff, have really not the issues they once were. And for that reason, we're having less and less children. Not all of us and not making that decision, but across the world, across societies, it seems to be that we are having less. We're living longer, and that's a big difference in our lives too. The average lifespan, again, this is average. Countries, continents, regions, populations will be different, but the average lifespan now is around 70 for males and the mid-70s for females.
Thought it might be higher, but that is probably higher.
That's the average. Average for global, exactly. And in Australia, we're nudging into the 80s, early 80s for men, mid-80s for women. It's not unusual now for people to get, the way I like to refer it, and I know she's departed no longer with us, but the Queen's telegram, which meant that you turned 100, was always the way that I understood that you were 100. I mean, Charles sends one now too. It just doesn't seem as cute or as wonderful to me as getting the Queen's one. But nevertheless, they're definitely sending out more. In fact, there was a wonderful anecdote while she was still alive, and that was that she used to not handwrite them at all, but she used to hand sign all the 100-year-old notes, and that was her. And that was her way of recognizing people turned 100 in her empire. In other words, there weren't that many. She could actually cope with it. And about 10, 15 years ago, don't quote me exactly, but somewhere around then, she stopped hand signing them because there were so many of them, and it became done by machine. So to me, that speaks.
Is it good news?
I think it is. It speaks to me wonderfully about the fact that, once getting 100 was really such an unusual thing that she could sit there with a cup of tea in the evening and sign a few, and it just got beyond her. And that speaks to the empire, which, of course, does have more calories, more possibilities, more income. I know it's not perfect and there are lots of issues around, but many, many people could live longer. So this question we have is, and it's one that comes up all the time because we talk about the notion of, will we have enough food to feed everybody? Will there be enough electricity, enough gas? Is there enough land? Do we have houses?
It's a really, really fascinating conversation. But I think when we get really stuck into this conversation, we forget to mention people exiting the world as well.
We do. But the notion, again, that people are living longer is what's making the big difference.
Okay.
And also now we have morbidity is dropping, thankfully, meaning that more children, there was once a time and not that long ago, where unfortunately a great number of children would die at childbirth or nearer or soon after. Either in childbirth or because there was some disease or something that the society just wasn't, their immediate society just wasn't ready for. And they would be simple things today by our antibiotics that we have so readily available, but it's still not available for everybody. Things like diarrhea would take children out not that long ago. There was diphtheria. There were all kinds of things that thankfully now we can tame. And that's really changed the notion of how many children survive, how, what our population looks like, the fact that we're living longer. We're also not just in the notion of more people, but we are moving around now more than we ever used to, because 100 years ago, which was a dawdle, meant that we had to get on a boat. I mean, it was a significant trip. My parents came from Europe to Australia. That was a six-week journey on a boat. You weren't going for a jaunt. This was a serious lifetime commitment.
So, Morris, is the age in which we live now the fullest the world has ever been?
It will be by 2084. So we're a couple of billion with a B away from it happening. And then what we believe and what is more than likely is we will start to dwindle off. So 10.4, it's believed that by the time we get to about this time next century, we will be down to 10.2 billion and we will start to dwindle down, not disappear, not significantly. But again, people will be living, we hope, healthier, longer lives, living very different lives to the ones that we might have had 50, 60 years ago.
And where do we put the change in the climate, however you want to sort of talk about this, into that?
The climate issue is a really difficult one, because I totally believe it exists. I have no issue with saying that humans have caused significant damage to this planet, that we need to do things to rectify. I believe that we are starting. We will never bring it back to where it was before.
Right. Weren't we always going to make significant damage anyway by natural stuff?
Yeah, but we've been really good at it, Phil, in the last 50, 60 years.
We haven't.
We kind of thought, let's not wait a couple of hundred years to cause the damage we might do. Let's see if we can concentrate down to 50 or 60 years and cause some serious damage, and that's what we've done. So we've kind of put the kilter off, and that's not a good thing. Yeah. But I also believe in all of this hysteria, and I do think some of it is, that's not to say it's not grounded, not true, but the fringe elements of the world is collapsing, that that we won't have sunshine, there won't be, the tidal waves are changing, that all of the continents will be underwater. I think a lot of those things are yet to be proven. There may be some basis, but yet to be proven. Mm. And I think over the next 50, 60, 70 years, thankfully, our children have a much better outlook on what needs to be done. And also, I believe the political clout eventually and the money eventually to say, look, our parents caused damage and they've tried to fix it, but we're going to have a really good kilt at this and make this planet habitable for far longer than we thought we might have otherwise done in their eras. I do believe that's going to be true again. We're not going to get it back to 100% pristine. It's just not going to happen.
Today, referring to another article by Morris, probably a brand new one, actually, and it's, as always, it's a very long, detailed read, so morrisfuturist.com. But a little paragraph I'll bring up here. The world is shifting. Asia's workforce is shrinking. Africa's population is booming and global markets are being reshaped. Tell me about the Asia's workforce.
Well, again, that's part of the work that I do, trying to get people to understand what the workforce is of tomorrow, what their business is going to look like, what the world will look like, so we can make a better, more informed decision about the world ahead and make choices today that are going to better suit what we need. And part of that world is really understanding that Asia's population is shrinking.
Why Asia? China hit,
Because China's population, which was one of the big growth areas, has now gone up to its peak about 2020, 2021. In other words, there are as many people going to be born into China in 2020, 2021 as will ever be born. And from here on in, not shrinking, not diminishing by any great numbers, but certainly not going through its peak anymore.
Right.
And that was one reason why Asia and a whole lot of countries around Asia, including Australia, were in heavy growth phase. They're now slowly, slowly starting to diminish, but not any great numbers that we're going to notice. Africa is the one that I talk about a lot because Africa takes most people, me included, by surprise. It's not something, and this is a terrible thing to admit, but it's not something that we think about often, especially not in the world that I'm in, the corporate world that I'm in. It's often hasn't often been talked about more now than ever before.
Yeah.
It hasn't been seen as a serious player on the economic, political clout perspective, and
it didn't help, Morris, that people used to probably still do say things like third world countries.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean. We really did not treat it with the dignity that it deserved, nor do we totally understand its powerhouse, because it still has, like every continent, it is. I do think the word emerging is a relatively good one for this in comparison to the rest of the world. Mm. It's just beginning to find its feet. There are some billionaires in there, and some of them have got their money by means we don't really want to go over. But there are other people who are rising into middle class, who are beginning to see the world and be able to experience experience the world in different ways. But their population is still increasing and is likely to. In fact, they are the population that will continue to increase beyond our 2084. It's believed by the year 2100 that they will roughly, this is Africa as a continent,
yep,
will have about 4.3 billion people living on it. Remember I said before we're going to get to about 10.4 billion in total?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a significant number of people on this planet who reside in Africa.
Obviously, as you say in your article, growth will be far from evenly spread. And then you go into looking at the different countries. Of course, we've talked Africa and Asia, but skip us through the others.
So Latin America and the Caribbean is another one. They're going to peak around 2055 at 780 million. And they have the same kinds of issues that Japan has faced already, Germany has faced already, Europe has faced, Europe will face and is starting to, and that is an aging population. The aging population is able to work a bit longer than their predecessors did, still have some money, but they're still going into those diminishing years where they must probably will not pay as much tax but require more out of society. And again, where do we regenerate the work from? We know there's AI at the moment coming in. There are lots of things we still need to understand about the workforce of tomorrow. And more importantly, how do we pay for stuff if there are less people paying taxes, which is primarily the way that most governments build our roads, build our hospitals, build our education systems. Education systems, what do we need into the future if there are not, you know, significantly less children, but how do we educate children? All those things are really important too.
Bearing in mind a lot of this is your predictions and sort of speculations and stuff and your research, of course, when did you write this article? Because I know it's really new.
I only put it up this morning.
Right, so the way
I wrote the article yesterday.
Okay, cool. So you probably have figured in whatever is going on in North America.
I did. Now, my figures are based, which is what you say when you haven't done it yourself, based on the United Nations World Population Prospects, which came out late last year. It's the base. It's the base document that most demographers use, and then they go on from there to do their own research or to pull in other research. But this is the one that you'll find most governments, most planners go to as a base document to figure out what's happening and what might be happening.
All right then, well, let's scoot down a little bit more. I'm just going to sort of nitpick here. So you did mention workforce and automation. So basically that means the nature of work, as you say many, many times, has changed. It's minimalised, hasn't it?
Well, a lot of the heavy lifting's gone and has gone over the last couple of hundred years. This is not about yesterday. No. Last couple of hundred years, we've really done, as a human race, we've tried to get rid of as much manual labour as we can. We've invented machinery. We don't walk as far. We know we have cars, we have buses, we have tractors, we have all kinds
so
of things to make that easier.
So we're devolving, basically. Skills.
Well, we're changing what we do as humans. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if we're devolving. It's an interesting argument. But the one at the moment, literally at the moment, is we are starting to do the same for our brain. A lot of the work that was left over was thinking stuff, routine maybe, but thinking stuff. And with all these new social medias, artificial intelligence, being able to use Excel and Word documents, I'm going back as primitive as that and that technology, whatever it is, we're able to put down and store our thoughts outside of our head. Now, that sounds like a silly, simple thing to say, but we haven't been able to do it very much over the past millennia of humanity, except in the guise of books or something like that. But we can actually take our thoughts now and translate them into something else that somebody else can access.
I know the whole notion of devolving, I mean, it's just nuts. I just said gills. But if you think about it, we don't have to do as much of the things that we were designed to do to keep us alive anymore, involving movement and
yeah, we don't.
The like.
And one of the things that shows that, and I can't say this is pure research because it's not. It's really speculation on my part. When you look at the obesity rates across the planet, and I'm in that bracket, so I speak of myself. When you look at the obesity rates, you begin to see a population that's very, very different from the one maybe 100, 200 years ago.
Yeah.
And not only do we have access to more food, more calorie, but we're also using our body less in the ways we once did.
So it's out of whack, I suppose.
Well, we had to walk to places because there was no other alternative. For many of us, we didn't have ready access to calories and food all the time. Didn't mean we starved, didn't mean life was terrible.
Mm.
It just meant we didn't go to the fridge and, you know, take out the extra bag of chips or a little bit of ice cream that might sit there, because again, we can store food, and it's not just about anything else, but the storage of food has changed over the last 100 years. We can have access in our homes or near to us of all sorts of things that really make us very happy when we have them. So to me, that shows a society that's kind of changed, because our body was made for heavy lifting. It was, it was made for walking.
Fighting,
I'm talking about
fighting.
Organically.
Yeah.
Organically, when you look back at how we had to survive to get here over the millenniums of humanity, we really had to push our bodies hard and work hard, and we died younger and did all kinds of things, again, across the board. These things have all changed. And to your point, I mean, it may not be devolving, because we argue whether that word's, you know, whether that's the word. And many would argue, and rightly say it is, but we are definitely changing what it means to be human and what our organic bodies are, we're putting them through.
Let's go to the end of this. I mean, this isn't gospel. Morris has just sat down in his darkened room and really just Olympic-level thoughts and imagination, which must be a wonderful exercise in itself, apart from the research bit, of course.
I mean, I love it, but I'm used to it. You and the listeners are used to my machinations and my strange thoughts and the rest of it.
It's really worth thinking about this stuff. Go to the end of this article. We've got a couple of minutes left. He says, final thought, the future is shaped by who prepares for it. Go on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've never been a fatalist. I mean, I believe in some higher power. I believe that there is some mechanism around us. But besides that, I also believe that he, she, it, they, whatever we refer to them as, still gives us the choice. And I've always said to my audience, to my clients, to myself, to my kids, to everybody else, it's up to us to pick up what we think is the future that we want, whether that's today, tomorrow, next week, or down the track in our careers, and to shape it, not allow it to happen to us. And that really is how I end that article, as I end most of my articles and most of my keynotes and workshops. All of this stuff we talk about is exactly that. It's just talking. We have to turn it into action, and that's how we hopefully put together a sort of tomorrow that makes us happier than the one we had yesterday or the day before.
Well, you spend so much time thinking about and writing this piece, but can I ask you now, you know, your takeaway, stuff that you didn't know that you knew?
Well, I always like to go back and see the stats. I know it sounds strange, but to see how the population is changing, and to put back into some kind of normality, some kind of conversation, the fact that humanity as we once knew it, which was this ever-growing beast, more and more and more people on the planet, is not necessarily what we will have by the end of this century. A lot of our planning, a lot of our thinking, a lot of these notions of having excess of everything needs to change now, because our numbers will start to change. And we can also, which is to me the underlying point, we need to get far cleverer about doing more with much less. We waste a lot of food, we waste a lot of water, we waste a lot of land. We should be getting better at doing that now with our technologies. No, we're not. But if we look at the numbers of people that we're going to put on this planet, 2 billion more in the next 60 years.
We're going to end with the two words that you and I both like the most, and that is, of course, horrible humans. That's what it comes down to. I'm going to leave it there, Morris. Wonderful chatting to you. We'll do it again next week. That's Morris Misalowski, who's in St. Kilda.